This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 off select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use the promo code GEEK at checkout.
That's what she said.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the autopilot edition of the show, a chance for us to go back and watch an old pilot of an old classy geeky TV show and talk about how it differed from the rest of the series and what we remember from the show in general. I'm Scott Johnson, he's Tom Merritt, and this week we're talking about MASH.
I made two very subtle changes to the intro,
yeah,
and it didn't trip you up at all.
No, I did all right.
No, and it was me. It was what I had written was unreadable before. And that I basically took two words out.
Yeah.
And smooth like butter.
That's right, because we're professional podcasters. I'm Scott Johnson, that's Tom, and look where we are. We're in the same studio.
We
you can't tell because he's in a seat over there if you're watching the video version. And if you listen to audio, you're like, hey, where's the usual slight lag you would have? Oh, look, see here, proof.
But I could be on your mic.
Ah, see, walked around. It's the magic of television. Today, the world of tomorrow today.
We are the pros from Dover. Oh, wait, that's the movie version of MASH.
That's right.
They don't say that on the TV.
That's right. Now, we've said this a bunch today on different shows. We may as well say it one more time. Tom's on his way to Illinois and decided to do a bit of a layover in Salt Lake City, get a chance to hang out, do some shows together, have some food, have a good time. That's what we're doing. And Current Geek is on the list. We were supposed to do it last night because that's the normal schedule, but we scheduled it ahead of day so we could make sure it happened today.
Yep.
Here we are.
Gave me a chance to fly in. We watched the show together.
Mm-hmm. And tomorrow, all you people that are here for Core tonight, that'll be tomorrow, okay? Tomorrow. Tom will be gone then, and we'll do Core. Don't worry. It's all happening the way we want it to. But it's the pilot episode, and we're talking about MASH. Mobile Army, what is it?
Surgical Hospital. Yeah.
We're talking the original MASH that premiered on TV in 1972.
September 17th, 1972, directed by Gene Reynolds, written by Larry Gelbart. And those were the two showrunners of MASH for its first 4 years. Then Gelbart left. Reynolds stuck around for a while. Then he left. And Alan Alda and Burt Metcalf kind of saw it through the end of its run. It went for 11 seasons. MASH, kind of generally speaking, is thought of as being very comedic, but also a drama in its Gelbart run, and then becoming very dramatic with comedy in its Burt Metcalf run.
Sure. And the show is having, I think, a bit of a renaissance by being on Hulu. You can go there and watch the whole freaking thing. It was on Netflix. The deal for who gets to have it changed, and the whole thing moved over to Hulu, where that show, among others on Hulu, is just kind of on repeat in my house. We're huge MASH fans. Tom probably, a lot like me, grew up with MASH reruns. We were too young to catch it in its original premiere.
Oh, no. I watched original premieres from, I don't know, 78, maybe?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, from then on, sure. But when you when this
we
thing...
We didn't see the pilot.
No.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, we were like two-year-old infants.
Yeah.
We were tiny little babies.
Tiny little babies.
I swear high school was punctuated by a number of things. One of them was every night at 10 on Channel 5 here, the news would happen, and then at 10:30 the news would go away, and they'd say, all right, stand by for MASH.
Yeah. Larry Connors on Channel 4 would always say, coming up next, MASH.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not from St. Louis and you didn't live through that period of time, it doesn't sound like much, but it was iconic.
Sure.
You know, we all imitated it.
Yeah, we loved it. It was great. One of my favorite jokes in the whole world came from MASH. It's later in the series.
Might have been ABC, actually.
Oh, was it?
Reruns of MASH, now that I'm thinking about it. But I think Connors was on Channel 2. Anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, ours was an NBC affiliate, but I think it was just a matter of who bought the rights for the syndication.
Yeah, because the reruns could be on a different network.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would watch MASH when it was new every Monday. I would watch as many reruns as I could possibly find. I had for Christmas one year, I got a book of all the episode summaries. This is before Wikipedia, kids. You couldn't just look it up back then. And it had pictures from everything. And I went back and tracked to make sure that I had seen all of the episodes, and because they would show them in order on the reruns, so I'd know where I was. And I'd get really excited when we'd get to near an episode I hadn't seen, where maybe like where Trapper left.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd ever seen that, you know, when it aired, of course. So it was a big part of my tween years, I guess.
Yeah.
And I've got all kinds of memories associated. My friend Mark Jurgen and I called my room the Swamp. After the in honor of the MASH Olympics episode, mm-hmm. We did our own MASH Olympics in my backyard. All of us in junior high took nicknames based on characters from MASH. Like, it was huge.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And to this day, I still find it incredibly enjoyable. And I watch it frequently. So we thought, hey, this is a venerable show. This won all kinds of awards. This had an impact on culture and you know, went much further than certainly the book and the movie did in terms of fleshing out characters, both old and new. And I have to say, I mean, even though I've kind of just watched it all again recently, sitting down and watching the pilot with you yesterday was really fun. A quick note, we recorded this thing where you and I sat down and watched it, and that recording will go up on the Patreon for patrons. It's just us kind of live commentating as we watch this thing.
Yeah, just chatting about the show. Yeah. Because we had both already watched it previously, so we were kind of rewatching it to refresh our memory.
Yeah, so it's just a little bonus for you. Nothing too crazy, but you might get a kick out of it. We had some good laughs and learned a few things along the way. For example, Bruno Kirby is in the premiere of MASH.
Right.
Doesn't say a word, but he's in there.
You recognized him, too. I didn't.
Yeah, and I think it's because we just watched Godfather 2, and he's in that.
Yeah.
And it's right around the same era, and the face just went ding, set off an alarm. But anyway, you are, you know, let's go back a little bit. You're a big fan of the original film, the
yes.
Robert Altman film.
Well, all of that love of the TV show led me to want to investigate the film. So the first access I had to it, well, actually, the first time I noticed there was a film, how I learned MASH the movie existed was seeing a laser disc of it in a store window at St. Clair Square Mall.
Wow.
And I was like, wait, there was a movie? And then I, you know, researched and found out, oh, that's what the TV series was based on. Then I bought a cassette of the MASH soundtrack for the movie, which was basically all of the Japanese songs that they played over the loudspeaker in the movie. By the way, most of which are in the pilot episode of the TV series,
yeah,
I noticed.
Yeah.
Interspersed with chunks of dialogue from the movie that I did not understand because I hadn't seen the movie. But I memorized these chunks of dialogue from this cassette and then eventually finally got the VHS cassette tape of MASH the movie and watched it. And I still to this day love that. I read the book by Richard Hooker. And still have a deep love for the entire series.
Yeah, it's great. Here's an example of some of this music, I think. I think I found some. Hold on. No, that's
nope.
not it. That's
it. Definitely not it.
How about this? No, that's not
nope.
it either.
Yeah, okay. Wrong country.
How about this one?
No,
that's not it. How about this one? Nope, that's country.
Not even.
Okay, here we go.
Where are you finding these?
These are not it.
No.
It's Cold War Korean War music, but
yeah,
I don't think
no.
it's focused on the Japanese geisha stuff. See, you know it, and you still remember it because you probably played that tape.
I don't
over
know the words because I don't speak Japanese or Korean.
Yeah.
And they're mostly in either Japanese or Korean.
So
Tokyo Suicide Boy. That part I remember.
Yeah. So this is a show where you had a couple of carryovers. One of which I didn't know about till yesterday. After all the times I've seen MASH, never noticed. Your two carryovers from the film are Gary Berghoff in the role of Radar O'Reilly.
Sure.
Walter Radar O'Reilly. And then you got Colonel or General
Hammond.
Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
Also from the film, he was the opposing football team.
Yeah.
Captain and also a general in that, I think.
Yeah.
Or Colonel.
I think he was General Hammond in both.
Yeah, I think he's the same guy, right?
Yeah.
Gee
Wood plays that.
Right. And they moved over from the film. And, of course, Radar hung around much longer. We didn't really get Hammond very much. We had, what did you say, 3 episodes or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Really short-lived thing, but kind of an unusual thing. I can't think of too many other examples of film to TV where it was successful and somebody from the film carried over. It's just kind of a rare deal. Radar kind of holds that record, I think, for having one of the successful carryovers from film to TV. But that in general is like a whole conversation. Pretty rare for a film to be converted to a television show and work. I think it's more possible nowadays than ever, not just because of how many platforms there are, but how forgiving we are of experimental stuff if it's good. Fargo is a good example of somehow that worked and is amazing. That's an incredible show based on an incredible film, but kind of rare, Tom. You don't usually see a successful.
No, it MASH sort of is the exception that proves the rule. I think Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore was turned into the TV show Alice. Mm-hmm. There's a handful of others, and it was possibly more acceptable in the 60s and 70s because people were less likely to have gone to the theater and seen the movie more than once, if at all. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have this veneration of the source material like you have now, where you can, like, I can go watch it at home. And that is definitely not Hawkeye. Hawkeye is Elliot Gould or Donald Sutherland.
Right.
This Alan Alda guy, who's that? Where is Trapper John Elliot Gould? He's Trapper John. You don't have that. So I remember in the 80s, it started to become a problem to turn it into a TV show. 9 to 5, the movie.
Yeah.
They tried to turn into a TV show.
That was bad.
I'm actually real curious how many seasons that went. But people started to, because of videotapes, I think, this is just my theory, start to realize, like, no, I can rewatch the source material with Lily Tomlin and Dolly Parton and Jane Fonda. I don't have to put up with a pale imitation of it. And in some ways, that's kind of sad because MASH, the TV series, became something entirely different and also valuable, separate from the movie.
Yeah. So it's all about in the right hands, I guess. You can pull this stuff off. That's why I think Fargo's so good. It's just the right people making the thing.
I think, too, like, what Fargo does is says, we're not going to try to be the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to capture the spirit of the movie with different stories, and that works. Where MASH succeeded was when they did the same thing eventually. But this pilot that we watched is very much trying to be the movie.
Mm-hmm.
From playing the songs over the loudspeaker to having all the characters, Lieutenant Dish, Spearchucker Jones, that too many characters to fit into a television show. And the plot very much mimicking one of the plots in the movie. In the movie, it's about convincing the Painless Pole that he shouldn't kill himself.
Oops, sorry.
By doing a sort of fake placebo situation where then he wakes up with a nurse. Mm-hmm. And he's saved. The sort of clean for television version of that is, we'll put on a party for Ho-John so that he can go to college.
Right.
And we'll give away passes to Tokyo with a nurse.
Yeah.
And even though it's not exactly the same story, it's trying to capture that same feel of Hawkeye and Trapper working around the system, and, you know, the hijinks and the sexual tension with the nurses and all of this. A lot of it extraordinarily sexist, in retrospect, but it is trying to capture the movie, and it also doesn't feel like the MASH that it became later.
No, yeah, I completely agree. I feel like the first, the pilot, which is why we're focusing on it, and how it differed from the rest of the series, is much more in line with what the movie was and its themes. And you and I, so we haven't said this yet, but usually we just watch the pilot and that's what we talk about.
Yeah, 9 to 5 went for 5 seasons.
Oh my gosh, what? How is that possible? That was objectively bad show.
More successful than I remember.
All right, maybe somebody liked it. But anyway, Tom and I sat down, we watched the MASH pilot, and then, just because we were there and it's only another 20 minutes, we watched the second episode. And I could already tell with the second episode that we were moving away from the film compared to the first episode. The first episode was very tonally in line with the film. Second episode, not so much. Also, characters that were introduced in the pilot are not there anymore. For example, you don't see... So Spearchucker Jones and Ugly John do not last very long. I think Spearchucker's like, what? 10 episodes in the series.
By the way, I do think it's important for us to take a moment and acknowledge that Spearchucker, a horribly offensive nickname that was chosen on purpose by Richard Hooker in the book based on sort of the taking of a nickname by the character. In the movie, right, it's explained that he's like, you know, people started calling me it and I just let it roll off my back. It is a commentary of race relations at that time, and it's probably not something that they would allow on TV very easily these days, unless it was on an HBO and it was couched in the way it was in the movie. I find it kind of a bellwether of the times that in 1972 they had a character, they called him Spear Checker with no explanation, which is, you know, again, just like the rampant sexism of it, without couching it in the, hey, in the time, this is the way people actually acted, this is why they acted that way, can come off pretty bad.
Yeah, I agree. So they didn't stick with that very long. There was also, I found multiple sources that said one of the reasons that the producers got rid of the character wasn't because of its sort of on the face sort of, you know, offensive name, but that they couldn't find any record of the Korean conflict where black, what do they call them? When you're putting somebody to sleep on the table, what are they called?
Anesthesiologist.
Anesthesiologist, which is what his character was.
No, he was a neurosurgeon. Ugly John was the
anesthesiologist. Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. I've got him backwards.
Yeah.
But the idea was that there were no black surgeons working in MASH units. And that was according to multiple sources, that's some of their reasoning. Now, I don't know, man.
Richard Hooker put Jones' character in the book. Jones' character was in the movie. It seems like you could have kept him anyway in the TV series if you really wanted
to. I think it would have been fine. I think that name would have been troubled down the road, but yeah.
Well, and that's what I would have expected is you keep the character and you just call him Jones.
Yeah.
You know, you just drop the nickname and then you can have some really important storylines about the fact that here he is, the top neurosurgeon who is also black. And, you know, the incorrect assumptions that people make about him because of that, that's all explored in the book and the movie very well.
Right.
Maybe there was some network fight about it behind the scenes or whatever, but
right.
They just abandoned that.
Good news though. If you liked Ugly John and you were sad when he went away, he comes back in like season 10 or 11, as a one bit thing in one episode, not the same character though, somebody else, but that actor comes back and with his Australian accent does a little scene with Charles Winchester you don't lose him completely. But the show was actually kind of famous for this. A lot of recurring characters would come back.
Yeah, yeah.
That weren't not recurring characters, recurring actors playing different roles. Not just the various Asian actors who would play different roles, usually playing different Koreans. Not always Korean themselves.
Almost never Koreans.
Correct. Once in a while, but most of the time, no. There was this really great thing that happened where Colonel Potter, played by Harry Morgan, came as a sort of season premiere of one of the new seasons. But the previous season, he was in a regular episode as a completely different guy, a crazy colonel that was there for other reasons. Had nothing to do with Colonel Potter. It was a one-off. Harry Morgan came in, was kind of bonkers. They gave him a Section 8 at the end and sent him home. And it was very brief. If you're binging a show like this, you notice it. You go, oh my gosh, that's Harry Morgan, and he was just here, and now he's Colonel Potter? How do you get away with that? But back in the day, it was a 24-season season previously.
Sure.
Which was broken up by hiatus, like a break, and reruns, then a big chunk of time before the next season. Like, it was different then. You were waiting week to week, and sometimes year to year, to get any kind of, like, closure. And so I don't think people noticed Harry Morgan came back as a regular. I'm probably somebody did. But the show's sort of kind of weirdly famous for that. But there's one character introduced in the pilot who is not that person anymore from then on, and it's the actor who played Father Mulcahy. Totally different dude.
Yeah.
Gone.
Well,
poof.
There's a lot to say about this. First of all, it's not the same Mulcahy from the movie, which was René Auberjonois, a.k.a. Odo, from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
He did not make the transition to TV, which is funny because he ends up having a long career in TV later.
Yep.
They also didn't really give him any lines.
No, he didn't say anything.
In the pilot.
No.
And then they replaced him two episodes later with William Christopher, who, of course, made the role famous. But there's a situation where in the pilot was it in the pilot or was it in episode two? Because we did watch both.
Which one?
I guess it had to have been the pilot because he wasn't in episode two.
Right.
They call him Red.
Oh, right.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's got red hair.
Yeah.
Well, in the movie and in the book, he is referred to as Dago Red, which is odd because his name's Mulcahy. But if you don't realize this, Dago is a insulting name for an Italian person.
Right.
They decided, now, not going to use that term on national television. We'll just call him Red. Couldn't you have just called him Jones?
Probably.
With the same exact logic.
Yeah. I mean, where were we in 72? I'm
exactly.
Trying to think.
This tells you a lot about where we were in 1972.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't mean to diss MASH. I love MASH. I think it was great. And it was partly popular because the Vietnam War was still going on mm-hmm. when it began. And it was a veiled commentary on the Vietnam War that they could get away with because it was the Korean War. So we caught, I think this was in episode 2, we caught a reference to all of Southeast Asia, which Korea is not in.
Right.
The writers kind of let that slip because Vietnam is in Southeast Asia, but Korea is not. So yep. It very validly was a commentary on the Vietnam War in a way that people could swallow and people could accept, even if they had differing opinions. In fact, Richard Hooker, the surgeon who wrote the book and consulted on the movie, didn't really like the anti-war tone that MASH eventually took.
Yeah, and it took it hardcore later on. Like, I think the first couple of seasons, they do stick to more slapstick sort of camp joke stuff, and there are moments of seriousness, but it takes a real turn right around the time Henry Blake leaves and becomes a kind of a different show.
Which is around the time Gelbart leaves, too.
Yeah, that's true. And for better or for worse, it changed kind of the tone of the show moving forward. And so there's usually two camps of people. People who really like the first half of the MASH run and people who really like the last half and still enjoy the other half, but maybe not as much. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of the opinion that they are very different and I like them just fine either way. Like there's plenty to laugh at in the later ones. There's plenty of comedy going on, but I think there was some good, especially for the era. There was some good stuff to discuss. There were some, you know, good messages and interesting points to make about war and about how hard it is and how you got to keep sane in that mess.
Well, and life and why humans act the way they do.
Sure.
In various situations.
Yeah. And it won a lot of Emmys as a result of that.
I find some of the later episodes a little bit preachy these days.
Yeah.
And I find some of the earlier episodes a little bit shallow and offensive these days. Yeah. But the through line that makes me continue to love it is that they really were, in even if they stray one way or the other, trying to make a commentary about what it's really like to be a person in these situations. Mm-hmm. They don't always hit, but I think they made some important observations on that. And that's where I think what Hooker was trying to do really was carried on, even if he didn't love the way it went, because he wasn't trying to be anti-war. He was a Republican. He supported Nixon. I shouldn't say he supported Nixon, but he didn't. He was not trying to end the Vietnam War.
Right.
He was just a guy. He was trying to say, this is what bureaucracy looks like, and this is what it's like when real people try to survive within bureaucracy. And you could take that and make it anti-war, and did so very compellingly. Alda and Metcalf did that. Mm-hmm. Or you can do what they did in the movie and what they did in the Gelbart years more, which is really just focus on human stories and the comedy of it all when someone's trying to, you know, go to the letter of the law in a situation that doesn't allow you to follow the letter of the law.
Mm. It's also a show, speaking of comedy, that the studio said you need to have a laugh track. There's no such thing as a comedy without a laugh track. The show won't work without one. So you have to have one. You taught me something new in this viewing. And that is that I always assumed that the reason that there wasn't laugh tracks during the surgical scenes was because the producers would be like, oh, this is you know, kind of sacred stuff here. We're working on people.
And it's not funny when you're cutting on.
It's not funny. And so.
And that's true.
Sure.
That's why.
Right. But you say that was their concession. That was the producers not wanted no laugh track at all.
Yeah, Gelbart wanted no laugh track.
Right.
And the network was like, no, can't do that. Come on, it's television. You have to have a laugh track. So they got them to allow them, because of what you just said, because mm-hmm. it's like, hey, when we're cutting on people, we're going to have these guys cracking jokes because that's what they did.
Sure.
But that's not an appropriate place for a laugh track.
Mm-mm. No. Yeah, so I that was news. I didn't understand that, and now it makes sense why. There's a cut of this, I don't know if it's Blu-ray or DVD or something out there, that is all the entire series with zero laugh track.
Yeah, and that was an international distribution. A lot of countries got MASH without a laugh track.
Okay, that explains why they'd have it in the first place. That's really cool. I wouldn't mind rewatching it. Like, I want to know what the Henry Blake years were like without a laugh track, because honestly, it's hard for me to imagine it.
Yeah, especially because they're more, they're generally considered more comedic.
Sure.
Or going for the funny bone more often.
Sure. But it's, so that brings me to my point. It's kind of a long way around where I wanted to get to this, but I think MASH deserves a nod, and had it not had a laugh track, even more so, a nod for being a non-three camera set sort of comedy with drama, but a comedy that did it in a different way. And now it's all like that. If you watch Modern Family, if you watch Arrested Development, if you watch a million other shows, we just did the pilot for Larry Sanders, same thing. They are these situational things that we find funny without somebody telling us when to laugh. And I don't know if MASH deserves the credit or not. I think if it didn't have a laugh track here in the US, maybe we'd give it more credit for that. But the episodes where they did no laugh track, like because it was some serious topic, like, I don't know, the finale has no laugh track, for example. Right. Those felt groundbreaking for some reason. Like they felt like, oh, they're still being funny, but there's this really serious undertone. And I feel like just a lot of shows, like nobody, there are laugh track shows now, and I kind of hate them all. I can't watch Big Bang Theory. I hate it.
There's not that many anymore, though.
No, there's Big Bang Theory. Well, you're right. I'm saying I agree. There's Big Bang Theory. There's that new thing with Alice and Janney in it, like Mom or something. Mm-hmm. A couple others I can't place. 2.5 Men's gone, right? That's done.
Maybe one of them's gone.
One's gone.
So now it's 2.5 Men.
Well, technically, I guess
Is it 2.5 Men? Maybe you're right.
It was 2.5 Men. It was.
I don't know. We can't keep track of them anymore.
Charlie Sheen, the other guy, and then the kid.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway.
You're right. It's 2.5.
But How I Met Your Mother, which was very popular, was, of course, laugh track, Seinfeld, some classic shows were. But today it is rare. And rightly so. You don't need to tell me when to laugh. That being said, like I told you last night, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel if I watch a MASH episode that I know has a laugh track in it, the one I saw, and not hear it. It's going to blow me sideways. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm looking at the week of television in 1972 in the U.S.
Yeah.
And you've got things like Bob Newhart Show. Mm-hmm. You've got the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour, the Brady Bunch, the Odd Couple. The Partridge Family actually leaves the studio quite a bit.
That's true.
But most of these, you know, when you think of stuff from this era, All in the Family, that kind of stuff, Here's Lucy. It's essentially, if it's not a drama, it's a set and three cameras, and MASH took you out of that. Even though part of it was done on a stage set, especially in the first half of its run, all the outdoor scenes were done on an outdoor set that's now part of a national park.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, you can visit, you can go see that, and you can see old, like, derelict trucks and stuff, which is pretty rad. All right, guys, I'm busting in here real quick to talk about our friends at Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Casper mattresses are designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface that's just the right sink and just the right bounce. That's always good. Casper's breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. And they are just not any old mattress company. Or they're not just any old mattress company. I think I said that right. Casper offers a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience. How do I know this? I'm sleeping on one. Casper's mattresses are made in the U.S. And buying it online is easy. Order online, deliver to your door in a compact box, free shipping and free returns in the U.S. and Canada, and a risk-free 100-day trial. Now, you heard that right. And considering we spend one-third of our lives on a mattress, it is really important to truly sleep on a mattress before committing to it. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. It didn't take long for me to decide, but, you know, your mileage may vary. You want to take the full 100 days to decide? Fine, you can do that. They let you do that. I love mine. I love it. I was just thinking yesterday how much I love coming home after whatever I got to do. It was a crazy night last night, and I'm like, you know what? I just need to hit the sack, as it were. And I'm so glad that my sack, or my mattress, is a Casper mattress. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use the promo code geek at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use the promo code geek at checkout. Yeah, this is, I'm going to play a little bit of the theme song so we can just get some nostalgia going in the chat room because some of them have been talking about it. Here you go. Now that, of course, is the television one. The
State Park, not National Park.
Oh, did you say State Park? Yeah. Yeah, don't worry. Someone will turn it into a shit.
I memorized the words to this song.
Okay, do you know them? Can you do them now? Here, let me. Do you want the? Here, let me give you the movie one. All right.
Oh, well, that'll have the words.
Oh, it will, won't
it?
Yeah. Okay.
That's how I memorized it.
Yeah, that's not going to be.
Through early morning fog, I see visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld from me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please.
Sheesh, that's really good, dude. That's dark, though, isn't it? That yeah. original theme.
Well, and that's in some ways, I love the movie, not more. But in a very different way from the series, because the movie was, to me, real. Yeah. And this is probably why Richard Hooker didn't love the series as much. Mm. The movie was real. The movie felt like, yeah, man, I get a sense. I'm not going to say I know what it's like, but I get a sense of what it's like to have been in Korea as a doctor from the movie. You get a hint of that in the TV series, but it's a lot more sanitized.
Right. Now, here's a fun fact that nobody probably knows. I looked this up, so Tom doesn't even know. Maybe he does. MASH, Suicide is Painless, so that song from there, was written or co-written, the lyrics were written by a 15-year-old. He was the son of the director. So Robert wow. Altman's son wrote the lyrics to that thing and made $1 million.
What?
Through, you know, not just like an initial flat payment, but like overtime distribution. The TV show contributed to that, but made $1 million for his contribution when he was only 15. It says here, it was written by Johnny Mandel, but the lyrics are written by the son of the movie's producer, Robert Altman, when he was only 15 years of age. Originally, the song was written for actor Tim Brown, who played Corporal Judson in the movie, to sing during the Last Supper scene,
right?
In which the camp decides to hold a mock funeral for the camp dentist, Captain Painless Paul Wadowski, played by John Shuck. And let's see. Let's
and he on. Does sing it.
Yeah, he does sing it. But I'm skipping ahead here. Okay, here we go. Ironically, while Robert Altman received only $75,000 for directing the film, Michael Altman received almost $2 million due to royalties received because the song is used in the television series as well as the film. So he had his contract was residuals down the road, and if the series succeeded, he would still keep getting those every time that thing was played. Guy made almost $2 million.
That's amazing.
Nice job, man. Nice job. I mean, you know, and it's way over time and stuff, so it's not like he did it in one shot. So I think that's kind of fascinating. Anyway, it's iconic as crap. Like, you hear that song and I'm immediately transported back to being a kid, and it's 10 o'clock at night and I get to stay up and watch MASH.
You know, this is something I wish we would do more often. On Sunday nights at 8 p.m., yeah. When MASH first premiered, this pilot episode first premiered, it was following the new Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
Actually, it followed Anna and the King, a series based on The King and I.
Yeah.
And then in the winter, Anna and the King was replaced by the new Dick Van Dyke Show. And then after MASH was done at 8:30, the Sandy Duncan Show came on until later in the winter when it was replaced by Mannix.
Mannix. Fantastic. By the way, I didn't know Dick Van Dyke had a follow-up show.
The new Dick Van Dyke Show, which was on at 9 p.m. after the Sandy Duncan Show until winter when it moved to an earlier slot at 7:30.
Yeah. Dick Van Dyke and Hope Lang play modern married couple Dick and Jenny Preston, who have a comic misadventure raising their teenage daughter.
Well, and this is an era, this may be another reason why MASH stood out. This is an era when you have Gunsmoke still on the air.
Yeah.
Mary Tyler Moore is coming with the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which is, you know, kind of, you know, like, oh, Mary Tyler Moore left Dick Van Dyke Show. Now she's got her own. You have the Here's Lucy, which is Lucille Ball trying to do another show. It, you know, like, you have a lot of sequel type series here.
Mm-hmm. Well, funny you should say that. So Tom, this is great. So we're sitting on my couch and Tom whips out his phone and he goes, watch this. And I'm like, what? And he throws something on AirPlay up to the TV. And I don't know what it is at first because it sounds like MASH. And at first I think, oh, is this like a documentary? There's like just a hint of the music, but it's not the same imagery. So I'm thinking, oh, it's some kind of documentary. And it looks old. And nope, Tom had found the premiere episode of Aftermath, the horrendously misdirected follow-up to MASH. And we ended up watching the whole two-parter, didn't we?
Well, yeah, I guess this I didn't really research, so I may be wrong about it. But certainly the YouTube upload that we watched was parts one and two. So two half-hour episodes back-to-back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was bad VHS editing or something, but the second half just kind of jumped all over the place at first. It was a little hard to follow. But yeah. But yeah, it was the first episode is pretty much all Colonel Potter trying to adjust to stateside life with a couple of appearances from Klinger. And then there's at the very end, you get a hint that Father Mulcahy is in it. And then the second episode is sort of how they all can come together to work at this VA hospital.
Yeah. And, I mean, at the time this happened, it was a huge deal. 100 million people watched it. It did not.
Yeah, it did air back-to-back September 26, 1983.
Okay. So, 83. And it
directed
lasted
by Burt Metcalf, written by Larry Gelbart.
Yeah. So, these are like, you know, these are MASH royalty.
Yeah.
You don't have, you know, Alan Alda and all those guys aren't playing the game, but... But you got these three dudes, and then it lasted way longer than I thought. What was it again?
29 episodes.
Yeah.
Two seasons.
Yeah. And the first season was like huge ratings. Like
yeah.
It did really good. I can't imagine it, though. It's terrible. We watched it. It's bad.
Well, maybe it got better. I remember actually being very excited to watch it, sitting down in my bedroom. Because I was the only one who wanted to watch it. And so I got the TV that I used for my Commodore 64. I turned on and tuned over the air to Channel 4. And I was disappointed. Mm-hmm. I remember being disappointed back then.
Yeah.
Because it was just so slow.
Yeah, it's super slow. Now, here's the... So a lot of people... And someone in the chat mentioned it too. There's other spinoffs. For example, one that never aired anywhere. There is a pilot on YouTube, though, and I recommend you go see it. It's terrible. It's called Walter, and it's Gary Berghoff at home, Walter O'Reilly, no longer in the Army. Same idea, really, but it's him and wherever he lived and out in the sticks, trying to help his mom's stuff grow. Go watch it if you have time to burn and just be embarrassed that you did, because it's so bad. And then there's Trapper John M.D., which unfortunately does not feature the actor who played Trapper John in the old show. It features, instead of him, Pernell Roberts as Trapper John. But it is that Trapper John.
The character is.
Yeah. Yes, it is him from the war. Now, when I was a kid and I knew this show was on, I thought, that's weird. There's a show called Trapper John M.D. That's the same name as the MASH guy. But clearly that's not the MASH guy. So this is about someone else. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I think I thought the same. I think I knew about Trapper John M.D. as a show and I thought it was boring. And then... I found out that there was a character before BJ Honeycutt named Trapper John.
Yeah.
And then my mind was blown when I found out that that was the same Trapper John as that boring medical show my dad liked.
Right. Yeah. And that show played a lot more like House or something. It was like it's just a hospital drama.
It was a medical drama.
There's no goofballness. There's no weirdness. There's no fun.
Right.
It's boring. Your dad, or you were right to think your dad was boring with that. It was not good. But why they didn't get what's his name in there, I don't know. Like, he would have been great. I can't think of his name. What's wrong with me?
Hawkeye?
No, who played Trapper in the show?
Oh, Wayne Rogers.
Wayne Rogers.
Well, it was supposed to be years later, and I think they felt Wayne Rogers looked too young.
Is that their deal? Is that why? Because I feel like the guy had just no career after MASH. He left, and it was like, all right, Wayne Rogers, see you later. In fact, we were talking about this. Pretty much nobody except for Harry Morgan, who kind of had a career already. But
and
not
he,
really.
He had a long career before MASH.
Yeah, yeah. Movies, westerns.
Lots of westerns.
Dragnet, all that. But then Alan Alda went on, did a bunch of movies, a bunch more TV, even in recent years. Did a great run on West Wing. Fantastic stuff. Guy's great. But that's it.
Wayne Rogers did 13 episodes of City of Angels, did 57 episodes of a series called House Calls as Dr. Charlie Michaels.
All right.
He did a lot of guest appearances. He had consistent work.
Yeah.
He was on the Larry Sanders Show.
Oh,
for one episode.
Really?
And then, his sort of last big series was, it looks like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes of Murder, She Wrote as a recurring character.
Okay. And they recently died. In fact, that's happening a lot lately. We lost him just not too many.
Yeah, what's up with people dying? I didn't think that we were doing that anymore.
Well, they get old, you know. Yeah. In fact, in 2016, we lost William Christopher, died at the age of 84. That's hard to believe he was 84. That's crazy to me. Jamie Farr is looking real old. Not saying he's on the watch list. I'm just saying, jeez, you know, getting there. Yeah. Harry Morgan died, of course. Mike Farrell's still with us. David Ogden Steer just died. Winchester, he was 75, and that was just in March. Anyway, it's about that time. The people of the 1972 hit television shows are getting there. And Wayne Rogers also in 2016. It's kind of a bummer. 2015, was it? TVZ gone? Yeah. Anyway, let's not dwell on the dead. Let's talk about the living. Here's the big question, Tom. Do you believe, because I do, and I'll explain more depending on what you say.
Okay.
Do you believe that MASH could be redone today?
I think, yeah, this is our perennial question with all this stuff. Right? Yeah. Could you remake the movie? Could you remake the series?
Yeah.
I do. I think one of the things that makes it possible to remake something is if it was really good, maybe even beloved, but has serious flaws that maybe weren't considered flaws at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, especially the early years of the TV show, I think fits that.
Yeah.
I would like to see someone do a series of MASH in the vein of the movie.
Mm.
So this would have to be like an HBO, Netflix type thing.
Sure.
But give me the Elliot Gould, Donald Sutherland, Hawkeye and Trapper, obviously played by new actors.
Right.
And give me that gritty feel of Korea. Make it a limited series, maybe 3 or 4 seasons, so that you actually do it in real time. Because, you know, one of the running jokes of MASH being on for 11 seasons is it's, you know, well outlasted the Korean War.
Oh, hugely.
And so, you know, I think you could do that. I think it's ripe for that, actually.
Yeah, I do too. Also, so one of my ideas is, and someone in the chat beat me to it, but if you wanted to, maybe move the idea to a more modern conflict. The problem is MASH units were kind of discontinued. And so you can't say, well, here's a MASH unit in Afghanistan.
Yeah, right, right.
But you could do something in Vietnam. You could set, and I know that we have China Beach. That's a great show, too. People should watch China Beach.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of other, you know, shows about other wars and MASH-like stuff.
I just know that when you hear the words, should they remake MASH, your brain wants to say, no, don't do it. But I'm telling you,
don't remake it the same way.
Right.
Definitely not.
Right. Yeah. I'm just saying to you, if somebody walked up to you in 2002 and said, Tom, what do you think about remaking Battlestar Galactica? A lot of people would just go, that's a terrible idea. Please do not do that. That sounds bad. And guess what? It wasn't. It was rad and it was awesome. And it's about how you re-envision it and how you execute that thing. And BSG was hugely influential, the new one, in lots of ways for even more modern sci-fi that we enjoy today. Like, it had a real impact. So I don't want to live in a world where people don't make these kinds of risks. I would love to see somebody take a risk on MASH. That's all I'm saying. And if you're still going to set it in the MASH time or in, you know, Korean War, fine. If it's still these same characters, fine. Just put it in the right talented hands. I like your idea of a limited series. Like, that would be great. Why not?
I think there's also a really interesting fork that I hadn't considered till you were talking about this idea of, like, put it in Afghanistan, etc. First of all, the successor to the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital is the Combat Support Hospital. So what if you did CSH and do it modern?
Sure.
And sort of divorce it. Like, you know, what we're going to vaguely try to do is show what it's really like to be a surgeon in wartime conditions. And otherwise, it's not going to have Hawkeye or Trapper or anything like that.
Sure.
The other way you could go about it, though, is the last MASH unit in combat was in 2003 supporting the Operation Iraqi Freedom effort. It was the most decorated combat hospital in the U.S. Army with 28 campaign steamers on the organizational colors. The 212th. Wait, was it the? Yeah, it was the 212th. And it was also the last ever deployed in 2005 to support the Kashmir earthquake relief operations in Pakistan. What a great story.
Yeah. See,
the final MASH unit. Yeah. Like, probably a better documentary, maybe. I don't know. But tell the story of how it became the most decorated combat hospital in the U.S. Army, how it then went on to save lives in earthquake relief, and was then the last MASH unit to be decommissioned. I think there's a story there.
Yeah. Someone in the chat is insinuating the idea that it couldn't be a comedy. And maybe they're right. Maybe it would be a better drama. But I also think you could have aspects of comedy in it in the way that the film did.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason why you couldn't have some fun with it. Again, the right people, the right writers know how to do that with characters.
It's a dark comedy. That's sure. What the film is.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. So I don't. Will it be a laugh tracky, cappy thing? No, it's not going to be that. It would never be that again. But I think it would be a really cool take. And I love that idea. I'd love to know more about that. Actually, maybe something does exist about those guys. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's quite possible there is a documentary about that we just don't know about.
Yeah. Anyway, MASH. It's awesome. People should watch MASH, I think. I think it should be a part of their lives.
I mean, it really has stuck with me. I still, without even thinking that they're from MASH, say quotes from it. Like I said, it had a huge impact on my upbringing, and there is something about watching that opening credit scene still that just is very nostalgic for
me. Yeah, it really works for me. Oh, and that's fun to watch too, because the pilot has a I shouldn't say wildly different,
an extended,
but it's different
opening.
Yeah, there's some comedy bits in
right,
some laugh tracks.
So the extended opening has more scenes. It's trying to be a little bit more like the movie in that respect. We also get an ending where, you know, the cast is announced as being permanently assigned to the 4077th. And what's funny is Lieutenant Dish and General Hammond are both announced as permanently assigned. We only see Dish for a few more episodes too. And G. Wood is not in it for much longer. But one character is in the pilot episode that will be in the final episode, but he's uncredited, and you don't know it's him yet.
Yeah, it's really weird, and I didn't know at all until Tom said it. So we'll just say what it is so you guys can listen to it. Watch the pilot, listen to the PA announcer, and then realize that that's Klinger.
That is Jamie Farr.
Jamie Farr is straight up doing that.
He's not yet Klinger.
No.
Klinger has not been invented yet. He was not a character in the movie.
Yeah. But and he's not the guy later. They went through two or three of these people. So he's not in there the whole entire time. But I didn't know that was him. Tom pointed it out, and as soon as I heard it, I went, oh my gosh, that's freaking Jamie Farr. It's weird.
Yeah. And once you hear it, you can't unhear it. But you don't really notice it unless you know it's him.
Yeah, it's really weird. So something to watch for in the pilot that's really fun. Look for Bruno Kirby. The show would have a lot of interesting guest stars throughout its run. Ron Howard's in an episode. I was talking about, what's his name? Roadhouse.
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze's in an episode. There's like a ton of actors. Joey Pantalone, or how you say his name, is in one I watched recently. Like, it's just filled with these people that would go on to bigger stuff later. And it's fun to sort of watch that. Earlier in the show, I almost started telling a joke that's my favorite joke ever told on the show. And so now I'm going to finally, you know, tell you. So all of you who are still hanging on what joke that was, here you go. Ready? There's an episode where Hawkeye and I think BJ, this is a non-mustache BJ, but kind of early BJ, were welcoming some new nurses to the place. And they went in there and they were giving them a gift basket of stuff. And one of the items was, and BJ says, and we brought you some shampoo. Or no, Hawkeye says, we brought you some shampoo. And BJ says, because we couldn't find any real poo. Still makes me laugh. I don't know why I think that's funny.
Because it's sham.
It's a sham.
It's a sham.
Yeah.
This isn't real poo.
And it stuck with me from all those years ago. And every time I hear it, I smile a little bit.
Do you have a, like, iconic cast that in your head everyone else is sort of an alternate version of MASH? Because I do. There are, you know, obviously Hawkeye is in it because he's in the whole run. But right. I think whenever you started watching MASH, that feels like the real cast. And the others feel like some weird alternate universe version of MASH.
Mm. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Because it's interesting. I know when I started to really be aware of watching MASH. I'm sure I was watching it before, just too young to really understand. Because to me, it's BJ.
Yeah.
And Hawkeye.
Yeah.
And Colonel Potter.
Right.
And Frank Burns.
Oh, interesting.
It's before Winchester. Winchester always feels like a new character to me.
He changes it. The tone of the show really does change
when
Winchester comes. When Frank leaves. Because the foil's gone. Winchester's he's too smart. He's actually a good surgeon. Like, they wipe away a lot of what the archetype was. At least with BJ, it was like, yeah, he's a fun-loving, happy, funny guy. He's a little more devoted to his wife than Trapper was to his. But,
right.
But it, you know, for the most part, he can still get drunk and have fun with Hawkeye. And Frank leaving and Charles coming in was very different. Like,
yeah, they replaced Frank's sort of sniveling, cowardly adherence to the rules with Winchester's pompous, snooty, I'm better than you as the foil.
Right.
And what really surprised me when I saw the movie for the first time is that Frank isn't like that in the movie at all.
No.
Frank is a very serious character who's dark. And the fact that he is in an illicit affair with Major Houlihan is scandalous, mm-hmm. not funny mm-hmm. like it is in the TV show.
Yeah, and it's Robert Duvall, who's like, you know, got a certain kind of gravity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's way more gravity. That's a good word.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's fascinating. So, it's a fascinating piece of television history because it kind of has no reason to exist. It kind of shouldn't have worked, and it did. And I think that's kind of awesome.
Somebody was asking about the laugh track. I was going to find number. There were some laugh track free episodes.
Oh, for sure, yeah. There's probably a list somewhere.
OR, The Bus, yeah. Quo Vadis.
There's the list.
Captain Chandler, The Interview,
yeah.
Point of View, and Dreams omitted the laugh track altogether, as did most of season 11, including Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen,
yeah.
The final episode.
The chicken was a baby, that whole thing.
Spoiler.
Oh, and Sydney died also. I'm keeping track of all the deaths, everybody who played.
Oh, the psychiatrist, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Margaret's still kicking it. Loretta Swit still out there.
Looking good.
Yeah.
Go, Margaret.
Yeah, she's all right. Her and Ellen and all this should get together and do an interview for something cool. Maybe not Charlie Rose anymore, but somebody like that. That'd be good.
Yeah, somebody younger, fresher. Chris Hardwick, right?
Yeah, maybe. You know, that's still...
Hey, you went there with Charlie Rose.
I did. All right. No, it's fine. You took it to...
I decided to make it extra complicated and unclear.
I like it. All right. We should talk about next month's pick. It will be something that I've said many times on many shows I do not think has gotten old, and I still love every new episode of, even though everyone thinks it should end. Well, some people do. Clearly, the ratings are high enough to keep it around, but that is The Simpsons.
The Simpsons. So we'll talk about the pilot episode, but I also want to talk a little bit about the Tracy Ullman appearances as well.
Yeah, the old shorts. Plus, there was didn't it start with like a Christmas special and then the official first?
I don't know. You'll have to tune in a month and find out.
Yeah.
We'll figure all that stuff out.
One month from now.
I thought it was just on the Ullman show. Maybe there was a special Christmas special.
It could
first.
Be me not remembering, right? Yeah. It may be the episode that I'm thinking of, and it was just a big premiere around the holidays. Mm. But all I know is The Simpsons has had an enormous impact, and I want to talk about all that minutia, and there will be plenty of that next month, in the month of October, right here. Really? October? Holy shite. Sorry, time's being weird for me. That's next October, right here on the Autopilot edition of Current Geek.
I haven't gotten over Christmas being over yet.
I know, right?
It's almost October.
I don't like it. Next week, normal episode. That is to say, we'll talk about some geeky news, talk about some stuff happening right now in the world of nerds. And after that, we're doing the film festival, and I forgot what our next one is, but we'll figure it out. Shaving Ryan's Privates? No.
Shoot, I closed. It's on, if you go to the tab from The Godfather Part 2. Oh, Modern Times.
Oh, Modern Times.
Yeah.
Never seen it. Can't wait. Very excited. Anyway, next week, though, normal episode, so be here for that. Send us your emails, currentgeek@gmail.com. Don't forget, also, there is a Legal Geek episode this week. Covers the resolution of the Cards Against Humanity lawsuit against a company making a Trump-themed card game competitor. So do stick around to the end of the show and listen to that. He's always got something to say, that legal geek. And I think that's it. CurrentGeek.com is going to have links to everything you need, so go check those out. Find us on Twitter, Scott Johnson, Tom Merritt, and support us on Patreon.com/CurrentGeek. For me, for Tom, for the rest of you, we'll see you next time. Oh. That's right. Always, wait, I was going to say the other way.